Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastoma Vidavishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 18, number 18. When the individual soul chooses unreserved subservience to the inner power, he has access to the service of the untampered personality of the Absolute. The Kaivalya state mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam is the state of unalloyed devotion to the untampered personality of the Absolute. So here the term Kaivalya is meaning that oneness in purpose with the Lord. So you have that same mood that you can then function with the Lord in His eternal pastimes. Means what His mood is, how He functions as a person, His subjective mood, one is in line with that. So this is not the Kaivalya of the monists where they're just dealing with a portion of the Lord. How the monists misunderstand Krishna Lila. Exclusive monists imagine that the figure of the object of worship exists only in the mundane world, and that in the final position there is also no activity of worship. In other words, they deny the possibility of the Leela or the eternal transcendental activities of Sri Krishna. Because for their idea is that if there's form or anything, that's mundane. And then transcendentals beyond that, but they don't understand that the reason there's form and activities and feelings and everything here is because that's there in the original. And we're here by wanting to engage with those things not connected to Krishna. That's why it's here, that's why it's separate, that's why there's suffering. But not that we took up the secondary aspects of Krishna, of dealing with Krishna's energies for the purpose of merging into them. Right? Does that make sense? That was not the original context of the living entity coming to the material world. Okay. 20. Srimad Bhagavatam flatly denies this groundless contention in the most explicit terms. There is total absence of all mundane reference in the transcendental activity of Shuddha Bhakti. Right? So there's no mundane aspect in the Lord's pastimes. 21. The word activity is not expressive of Leela. It corresponds to Kriya, or mundane activity. Transcendental activity has neither beginning nor end. Because the mundane, you have a beginning, the middle, the end, and then the thing's over, and then you have to move on to the next. The notion that Leela can have an end or termination is due to ignorance, confusion between the conceptions of Leela and Kriya.
So we can say that our pramana is the scriptures.
Yes.
And as long as they don't accept that pramana, so there's no point of talking to them even?
It just depends upon, how they're situated. Means like you see Prakashananda Saraswati or Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, they were trying to find the absolute truth, but they had up to that moment only found the monistic approach. So then coming in contact with Lord Chaitanya and hearing the absolute truth in its natural state, then they took that up. So it's a matter of seeing. If the person responds, then it's worth pursuing. If they don't respond, it's not. It's a waste of time. It's just, in other words, it's the wrong time in the living entity's development in their, you know, traveling through, journey through the material world. So in other words, now they're too atheistic and too polluted to be able to appreciate. So then you just have to wait. That they've come in contact with devotees, they've heard something, it will, that they'll have that aspect of that benefit that will remain. But they'll have to go on in however many births until they come to the point where now they're actually willing to hear about it. So does that make sense? So that's why it's not that there's any loss. It's just a matter of time. So, yeah, so lila and kriya. So here they're taking kriya meaning activity. So lila means that the interaction between the Lord and the devotees. That's the actual point. Kriya is the actions performed and all that. So those we see here also, just as you can get these words can be used in both. Kriya is used meaning mundane. It also has its transcendental aspect. So when activity is used to serve Krishna, we just count it as lila.
Yes.
Right, because it includes all that. But technically, the lila is the Lord's mood of interaction with the devotees. That's what's the lila, right? Then you may have the technicalities of the actions performed that are taken care of by the kriya shakti. But when they're engaged in that way, they have that transcendental nature. Mm-hmm. But if you separate it from the Lord, then it's just kriya. It's not called lila.
Yes.
Right. In other words, lila includes kriya, but kriya doesn't include lila.
Yes. Yes.
22. Shuddha bhakti belongs to the category of lila. In Vrindavan, the gopis serve Sri Krishna by unconventional amorous love. The super excellence of this service cannot be admitted if the absolute wholesome nature of unalloyed activity on the plane of vraja is disbelieved, on principle, by one's ignorant, perverse judgment. Right, so if one doesn't believe in the transcendental position, the pure position, you can't understand the pastimes of the Lord. They will automatically take them as mundane. That's just how they'll work. The transcendental purpose of Varnashrama. The function of conditioned souls is of two kinds. The function that is provided by the Varnashram system for conditioned souls is not opposed to Shuddha Bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam has treated the Varnashram system from the point of view of unalloyed devotion. Right? So in other words, how you use Varnashram from that point, that's why we see certain things being practiced, other things aren't really talked about. They're in the system, but when you're using the system for pure devotion, then those aspects of it that are useful, you use. Just like we said, the kitchen has so many utensils, but what's useful for what you're doing is what you use. Right? It doesn't make the kitchen any less. It just means that that's what's useful. So in pure devotion, what aspects of Varnashram are useful, that's then what's given. So we see Narad Muni then discusses that with Yudhishthira Maharaj, and we see the examples of all the great souls. So it's just the natural position is that someone from the position who is a immoral atheist, with time then they it goes up into being atheistic moralist. Right? Then from there they go into a what you call a pseudo or quasi theistic moralist. Right? Because the difference being between the means then you have, and then that naturally then will with time go into the theistic, actual theistic moralist. Mm-hmm. So the difference between these two, because it's obvious what the atheistic immoralist is, that we don't have a problem with. But then these three, that where morality is there, but where it's atheistic, where it's pseudo-theistic, or it's actual theistic. Mm-hmm. The difference being is in the atheistic moralist, they make up their own religious concepts or own moralistic concepts. They make them up, they accept them.
Yes.
Theist, actual theistic moralist means moralism is based on theism. It means it's coming from authority. It's coming from God. It's coming from Scripture. Does that make sense? So the atheistic means that God has nothing to do with it. Right? Then the quasi or the pseudo theist moralist, then they still, it's their own rules. Right? But they'll say, you know, but God's there, so you have to do them. But in other words, God's just having to do with their rules. You understand? Like that. Because you see a lot of people, they'll talk about God, they'll accept it there, but it's their system of their social system. It's not God. So the actual theistic moralist means it's based on Scripture. It's Varnasha. Like that. Does that make sense? So like that. Then we see is that the theistic moralist in Varnashram then worshipping the deity is one of the rules. Like Manu has so many rules. Part of it, one of the rules is that every day you should go visit the deities, offer respects to the Brahmins, to the Acharyas, you know, the holy places. These things you should do every day. So it's an anga of Varnashram. Right? So then when that matures into sadhana, you know, sadhana bhakti, then we see is that there, then it's, how you say, then worship of the Lord is the prominence. It's not that worship of the Lord is an anga. No, now Varnashram becomes subservient to serving the Lord, rather than just God as part of Varnashram. Does that make sense? It switches. So even though externally, basically, it'll be the same, they're totally different because of the level of consciousness. Right? So the sadhaka accepts Varnashram in as much as it is supportive of the devotional activity. Does that make sense? But their decision on what they do will be based on Shastra. Right? Because the Shastra does give alternatives and this and that, it'll give that. We make it up again, then we're mixing in that lower, that second level of consciousness. Right? And then the spontaneous platform of devotion that we see on Anandamaya, and that is beyond. So they're far, but for them it's just part of the pastimes. So we see the Brajabasis, they're following Varnashram, but it's only in the pastimes. It's only for supporting the pastimes. Right, in the material world, Varnashram is used to maintain the body. Mm-hmm. Right, the body, the mind, the social status, those kind of aspects. That's what it does. Is that something? Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. It's an interesting point, is that when Varnashrama is against the lila, then Brijabasi immediately give it up. But yeah. Others won't do that.
No.
So that's
why you see they shift then in their rasa.
Yeah.
You know, or here is then people, you know, go against. That's where you see is that they judge Krishna, and the process of devotional service according to their own morality.
Yeah.
So that's where we see is that philosophically they accept devotional, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but religiously they're not. In other words, they'll accept it if it supports what they're doing. And so to start there, just like let's say someone's not a devotee, and you explain to them Krishna consciousness, you explain to them the religious process, and they'll judge it according to their own standard. And if for them it looks like it's something higher and something better, then they'll accept it. So they naturally will move forward.
So it makes them pseudo-theistic moralists.
But we're talking about someone, they're already...
I'm talking about the devotees.
It means it's mixed. It means they accept Krishna on the philosophical platform, but not on the religious platform. That's why it's a disturbance.
It's pranamoy.
So in other words, they're trying to mix pranamoy with their sadhana of vijnanamoy. So in other words, I say, we're not this body. Use the philosophy so I can establish my religious process of pranamoy.
Based on the body.
Based on the body and whatever is popular. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difficulty. That's the position. So it's natural. So the philosophy has moved forward. So by then engaging in the direct activities of devotional service, then they're nicely situated. Even though the indirect, or the varnashram or non-varnashram, is not technically connected. Mm-hmm. Other than it just maintains themselves so they can do the service. But they don't necessarily see that in the consciousness. So then with time, as they get purified, they'll start to be able to see how the indirect can be connected to Krishna. And then, when you get properly situated, then there's no distinction between them. It's just directly and indirectly, as Krishna says. He is everything. If the values are all Him, it's all about Him. So therefore, connect everything that is just to please Him. Right? So you see, they'll come up, and it's just like, let's say, it's a typical mentality where someone will be professing some more liberal stance in a modern context, you know, of application. But then let's say you defeat all those different aspects. Then the response will then be generally puritanical. Where now it's super fanatical, religious, no breaking of any rules. It's either we don't care for the rules, or the rules are everything. You understand? You kind of get these two sides. You know, it's just like, let us say, in some cases, something goes weird in the community, and what can you do? It happens, it's Kali Yuga. But something else happens in the community with a different, oh no, it's the end of the world, and you gotta, you know, completely destroy everything, you know, every this and that, kick everyone else, put them in a pod, send them to the moon, Mars is better, like that. But the guy did come back from Mars, so then, you know, try Pluto or something else, you know, you just don't want to go back. You know, so that's the things, they waver between this super fanatic about the rules and absolutely don't care about the rules. So it's all Niyamagraha. Right? So that you're at a particular platform and you're performing devotional service, that's not the fault. That's why we were saying yesterday about Misra Bhakti. You only call it generally mixed devotional service when you're pointing out the weakness. You don't call it if the person's nicely situated and the consciousness is progressive. Right? So then particular person joins, and it will be very standard if they come from a Western background, you know, for most, especially if it's like a Protestant kind of background, or that they will accept the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, so they'll be situated nicely in Vijnanamoy, in the devotional, in the direct activities. But as far as the social things and that, those things, they'll still be situated in Pranava. Right? Now, as they get purified and they start to see that these things can be connected to Krishna, and they naturally now connect that to Krishna in that higher level, when they become steady, they give up that lower level of Pranamoy and just become situated nicely in sadhana bhakti also as their religious process, then that's natural. But if they hold on to that and remain attached, that's Niyamagraha. That's where the problem comes in. Not before that and not after that. Just that they can function at a higher level, but they're not willing to. You know, just due to habit, due to attachment. That's where the problem comes in. That's where philosophy's coming. Because at the lower level, they don't even know that they're not doing, they don't even notice that they're not doing things varnashram. You know what I'm saying? It's just something's going on, you're going to start the kirtan, they want to go to the bathroom, they run to the bathroom, you know, they wash their hands because, you know, they drilled that into their head in grade school, and then run out again. They don't bother with the feet or mouth or this or that. Because in grade school, they didn't teach you to wash your mouth, they only to wash your hands. Right? And so as far as they're going, they're just being quick, coming back, getting into kirtan, and because, you know, you understand? So they don't notice these things. So for them, it's not an impediment. You know what I'm saying? But then when they find out the standard, oh, we're Westerners, you know, this is fanatic and all that, now it's an impediment. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that that's why whatever level they're at, as long as they're progressive, that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about, is that they're progressing from that point. They take whatever point they're at and connect and aim that at Krishna, connect that to Krishna. Right? And so then that's then what they do. And then as you go, you start to, as you get purified, then you can see in the association of devotees what's of standard and what's not. Then you can adjust it. So both in the philosophy and in the culture. So if in the philosophy you maintain attachment to impersonalism or yoga or all these other things, then we'll also have a problem there. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, we're attached to the ideas of Brahman and Paramatma, not willing to move forward to Bhagavan. Or if we accept Bhagavan and reject Paramatma and that, that's also, because that's not complete either. Because Krishna is doing all these things. So that's why all everything can be connected. Like the Sahajis won't deal with everything. Because it's all illusion. Only the Leela is real. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's just, they're sentimental impersonalists. Like that. So you have the dry impersonalist and you have the sentimental impersonalist. Like that, yeah.
So Maharaj, only by the association of devotee or advanced devotee we can go from one level of consciousness to another.
Yes, yes. That's the key. The whole key is association. Is that you're associating with devotees and appreciating that. And when you're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out is, you know, the definition of that is you're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the association of devotees, and you're trying to understand it and appreciate it. That endeavor may be, just that you're hearing it is nice, but you're actually trying to apply it. You know? Does that make sense? So it's not just hearing. That's why just hearing and memorizing isn't enough for a transcendental course. Like that. So that something
realization.
Then needs realization, so that means there needs to be manana. Like that, yeah. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam has treated the Varnashram system from the point of view of unalloyed devotion. Thereby has proved an intelligent way of viewing the situation of conditioned souls during their sojourn in the mundane world. Right? So by that, then you just see where everyone's situated. So it's not that, oh, this guy is a materialist. If you're in the material world, you're a materialist. You know? It's just a matter of you see where they are, what their consciousness is, what their background is, and then that way you try to engage them. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So it's a whole different approach to the preaching. Because it doesn't matter how contaminated they are or how pure they are or what they're doing. It's always judged in connection with pure devotional service and then how to get that person there. So in other words, that they're not doing recommended activities is not a problem. That they are doing recommended activities isn't such a great glory. You know, it's just like, oh, but in yoga they're peaceful and they're so nice and they're so this and... Okay, nice, great. That means you can talk nicely with them. You don't have to yell and scream at them. But at the same time, it's why are they there? Right? You know, it's probably not a transcendental reason. Probably not even a spiritual reason. Probably not even a technically, Shastra-based religious concept. It's just that yoga is popular nowadays and it's a cool thing to do if you have some money. Because you could do yoga at home and spend no money. But that's not cool. You have to go to the yoga studio. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. It becomes a social thing. And then in that, you know, the health, the mind, all these things and associating with like-minded people. Yeah. Like that. Well, if you're at home, then like the yogis do, then all you do is get you don't get any of the social benefits. So that'll be the more. Does that make sense? So these things are underlying. So, but it is good. Means the persons like that are more subtle. They're more aware of things. They're more appreciative of more subtle things. So. To be able to discuss with them about yoga and the actual purposes and take it higher, it might be easier. Right?
Not always.
Not always, because they're only interested up to the Brahman level. because even as yogis, they don't know about Paramatma. So that's the difficulty. And then they'll judge everything by their social, values. And so then Krishna consciousness will be seen from that. And so then it's a problem. So anyone like that, you leave. But the point is it's a matter of you just see where they are. And so it doesn't matter. Whatever good things are there, you use that. Whatever bad things are that, you don't worry about that. You look at the value of the bad things. Because even at the good things, you have to go through to the value anyway, because it's Krishna who's the value. He's everything within that. He's the value. And where does that come from? That comes from the person.
Right.
Yes.
But if we continue with that line, we see that sometimes devotees, on one side, they are ready for initiation, they want to take the responsibilities, but on the other side, they have their, fallbacks and everything. So we can have two approaches as such. The first initiation is just a chance, and it's the encouragement, it's just the first step, and everything else will follow. Another approach is that first initiation is a serious commitment, the person has to be ready, has to understand, and then not many people are ready.
It's a matter of steadiness, because it's just like if you're going to progress from one stage of consciousness to the next, then what's required is steadiness. So unless you're steady at one level, then you can't be on that level. So you're steady on the one level, so you're situated there. On the next level, you're not steady. You're doing it sometimes, sometimes not. But as that becomes steady, then that higher level is in your new level, and you give up the previous one. So steadiness is always, glorified. And that, because of that. So there has to be some kind of steadiness that you see as that steadiness, at least they're able to maintain within that first initiation and go on nicely. And then ideally be able to progress forward the second. But if you see that whatever standard of first initiation is being used and they don't even maintain that, then what's the point of the encouragement? You know what I'm saying? You encourage them and then they didn't make it anyway, so then what's the point? But that's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur broke the punch... what's that? What is it called?
Panchasamskara.
Yeah, Panchasamskara. Into two was just for that they could be steady up to a certain level and then take first initiation. Then when that steadiness progressed to what was qualified for full initiation or actual initiation, then they got second.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But so you have to see is it working? That you have to judge. So if you see is that the persons that you have, whatever level you are, and it may be a little lenient and they take it up, but they get encouraged enough that they move forward and remain and they're steady, then that's okay. But if you see is that it doesn't and they fall away, then why lower the standard? You know what I'm saying? Because the people involved are involved. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
But now, can we say that on that topic, it's very important that everyone has some shiksha guru, some person who can. Because very often when devotees get first or even second initiation, very often they are alone.
They're alone, but the thing is, If we look at it in its natural state, you move forward because of instruction, because of siksha. So that means before initiation, they should have already, built up a base of siksha guru or gurus.
Yes.
And only because of that, one being prominent becomes the diksha guru. So this whole idea is Prabhupada's always there, and then those who can give that relevant instruction to inspire you in Prabhupada's instructions, that's what expands, that brings you to initiation.
Yes.
Then after initiation, that continues. Difficulty comes is that the neophyte sometimes in their own made up, religious principle is that once you take initiation, you drop all those other siksha gurus.
Yes.
And then the problem, then they're alone. Because how often is the guru around?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that if there's so many, then either they're in the local where they are, or they're always regularly traveling through, or, you know, there's something so that that inspiration is there. So the difficulty comes up is that, like we said before, we make our own rules. Like I remember in one, well, it means it was like one place was there, is that they were so strict that you couldn't do puja after eating unless you took a full bath and clothes and everything like that. And I told them, but that's not the standard. The standard is you can't eat in the clothes you're going to wear for puja. That's the standard. Right? And then, just like you eat, and then the deities are going to be put to rest. You know, or you're going to be the one waking them up. So you've done all the puja and all that, you put the deities to sleep, now you're going to eat. And then after eating, then you're going to, you know, then after some short time, you're going to be waking the deities. So you can't wear the clothes you ate in. So that's why generally pujaris have, you know, some other clothes. They have the puja clothes, they put those and they put on something else, something simple or a gumshoe or something, and then eat and then wash properly and all that, and then they put back on the puja clothes. But they were saying, no, we're, you know, we have our strict standard, but it's kind of like, but you made up the standard. No shastra supports that as a standard. I mean, it's not that it's bad that you do it. It's nice. But the whole point is there is the thing is you don't take a bath after lunch either. You know? You do take a bath after going to the toilet. If you pass stool, but passing urine, you don't have to. But if you're eating and then passing stool, that means your health is not good. So you work on your health. You know? So yes, you take a bath, but then that's a problem. So the shastra deals with all this. So they make up their own, and they're very strict about this. But at the same time, on other levels, that would be just normal, just basic, you know, like puja 101, then, oh, we're not fanatic. It's kind of like, what's going on here? That's the whole point, is we make up our own rules. So that's the difficult. And then that catches, everybody catches that one. Whatever we make up, that one you'll see is international. And the actual rules, and you have individuals here and there following them.
It's hidden.
Yeah, it's hidden. So that's the whole thing we have to guard against, is by that association, then we're always able to understand. So we have to be careful of these made-up rules, like, oh, once you take initiation, then you can't, you know, deal with all these other siksha gurus.
Yes.
Because we make that up. That's the point is you have to respect your diksha and siksha gurus. If you're respecting your parents, why wouldn't you respect siksha gurus?
Who respects their parents?
The system works very pleasantly for humans. Means in culture. Yeah, that's it's the package deal, right? Yeah, because the point is that those who are not from the Vedic background, there'll always be more difficulty because of this. Because they don't actually have a standard of what you do and not do and everything like that. So that's the difficulty. It's just like, let's say for children, okay? Then they go to bed at a certain time, right? So generally the younger you are, the younger they go to bed. And as you get older, then that's the whole thing. You got a little older, then they move it back an hour, you know, instead of going to bed at 7, it's 8 and 9. And, yeah, like that. But for adults, there is no rule. There absolutely is no rule. When does a European gentleman go to bed? What's the standard?
Now? When we wake up.
Hmm? Yes, when we wake up, they're going to bed. You know what I'm saying? There's no real standard. It means if they went to bed, yeah, I was a little tired. I went to bed at, you know, 10 o'clock. You know, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, it was a real, real happening program and that. You know, after the program, we just went out for breakfast. We'd just think, wow, that was a party, you know. No one's going to say, that's stupid, why are you doing that, you know? You know, they're not going to say, it's Brahma Bhorta, why are you eating breakfast? You know? So that's the thing, there's no rules. What you eat, when you eat it, how much you eat it. There's absolutely no rules. So then to take up a culture where it's based on rules will be difficult for them. But the point is because they're in the human form, yes, it can be done. That's what it's for. But if you're from human culture, then it makes it easier. But then they'll have their problems. Because you see, is generally those from the non-Vedic, because it's such a thing, they really think about it. And the philosophy, they really focus on. Yes. So they accept that very nicely. But the culture is a problem. Those that have the culture, then the problems they're dealing with, that such great headaches and such, you know, problems in life, meaning, you know, you have to go to the, you know, for the, how you say, it's the 10th family wedding or friend's wedding this year, you know, and it's such a hassle and all these people and, you know, like that. And, you know, how do we get out of this, you know, like this. And so then, so they don't necessarily go very deep into the philosophy. Because they just take it that they're doing, or the philosophy applied to the Abhideya. They don't see the technicals. They're all they're doing it, but they don't see why they're doing it. So they don't apply. They don't think about it. So then it's sentimental. So that's the difficulty. So if you can get someone who's from a good background, who is thoughtful, bingo. You know, that's what you see. You know, how you say? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur when Srila Prabhupada came along. He goes, ooh, hey, okay. he thinks. He's from the city. Right, you know. You know, plus, you know, proper background. And, you know. So, it just means this, for being a devotee going back to Godhead, there's absolutely no problem for any living entity. Because we see is even in Krishna consciousness, animals can take part in the process. But it doesn't mean that they don't have their animal stuff, you know. You know what I'm saying? Dogs barking each other, or your cat being chased by the dog, or, you know, like that. You know, cat scratches your nose, or, you know, whatever it is. Does that make sense? Those things will go on. But so it's very, very nice that you understand and you see it, like it says here, Bhagavatam, from that view. Then you can see how it connects to Krishna consciousness, and then, therefore, everybody can be connected.
Yes.
Right? In other words, what can they do for Krishna?
Yes.
Right? They're an animal, they can take prasad.
Yes.
Right? Like that. So. They can listen to the kirtan. So you can extend that process quite high up into the, yeah.
So I have a question on that topic again. This means, even if a devotee is not expert to present Krishna consciousness according to the situation of the person, there is no loss if it is presented according to the, at least with the word from the pure devotional level.
Yes, yes. I mean, in other words, they speak their realization.
Yes.
You try to make you speak according to your realization and try to make it relevant for that individual.
Yes.
But the point is, because purity is the force, that purity is there, even if you're not so expert, it does have effect, because it's the chit potency that makes him a devotee, not nyaya.
Yes, yes.
Right? So as long as we think that, no, it's because I'm so intelligent and logical, that's why they become a devotee, it says, but that's not what makes anyone a devotee, it's the chit potency.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's not so, they may think what you're saying is weird and the examples are weird, but just the mood, they like the mood, or they're just that so sincere, so committed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something there, you know, so they want to know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So they become interested. So they'll read, or they'll talk to others, or they'll talk more to this person, and like that. So that's the thing that attracts, this pure devotion attracts. The natural nature of the soul attracts. The other things are just makes it easier. All we're saying is that in a society that prides itself in being intelligent and logical, then we mention along those lines. Since we're using our so-called intelligence and differentiate between hard preaching and soft preaching, why not then differentiate what's actual preaching?
Yes.
Right? Because the point is that hard and soft, these are just niyamagraha.
Mm-hmm.
I'm attached to, you know, you just go in there and tell it like it is. And yeah, you could say it like that to certain people now and before to most everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then we only preach like that, none of this new stuff. Okay, nice. But then you're attached to that. Why not just be a little sensitive to what people are saying? It's not that you can't say the absolute truth. just be sensitive to the wording you use or the tone. And then the other is that, oh, no, we have to change the tone and the words. But then Krishna's left out of it. So why not Krishna? It's just about Krishna, but you use the words and tones and examples that matches the person. But otherwise, the main why that works is because of that desire for pure devotion. The bhakti itself is what creates bhakti. Bhakti doesn't come, it's not from karma or jnana. So it's not what you do. It's not that, oh, we just do it food and people think we're charitable, then they'll want to join Krishna consciousness. But how many people become Christians because they give charity? You know what I'm saying? Nobody. So then why would we think like that? You know? So the whole point is that it's the conviction. I can remember one thing with in America, the Salem witch trials, right? Massachusetts. They decided, they came up with their own idea who's a witch and who's not. So basically a witch is anybody you don't like, you know? And even though, you know, how you say family members are witches, then, you know, they're just, you know, you just leave that point. And so then one person, then I think it was connected with that, then he was the hangman. Because in that particular... Oh no, this was a different one. This wasn't Salem witch trials. This was as different states in America, even though they left Europe for religious freedom, in the particular state or colony that they had, I think except for Rhode Island, all of them had a strict rule that you had to be of a specific Christian denomination. Otherwise, it was punishable by death. So much... That's what I mean. You know what I'm saying? Is that... You know, it's all liberal on one side and totally fanatic on the other. I'm not sure. It must be something. That's probably why it says don't cross the ocean. Right? Because something goes wrong with their head. Right? So, this guy was hanging this one lady because she was of a different denomination. And she was committed to it. And left up to the last breath, she was still committed like that. And he was so convinced just of her commitment to it, that he left that state and went to the other state that allowed that. And he became that denomination. So that conviction is what convinces people. I mean, these other things are tools, they help. You know, it's just like a good cook. If he has a good kitchen, it makes it so much easier. But a good cook, even in a bad kitchen, still will do well. So that's the whole thing, is that if we have these techniques and know all these things, it's nice. But it's conviction that makes it work. Because the point is if you're discussing realization, it's not theory. It's not something you have to memorize or remember. You're just speaking what it is that you understand. Right? What's your value? So that's then preaching. Now you can refine that by making it according to the particular audience. But it also depends upon you and what you can deal with. Like Srila Prabhupada, many times it would be very... Like he's giving a class to the devotees. But let's say it's a special program and there's some extra guests there. He'll talk in such a way the guests will understand. Right? And other times he'll just speak in the way just the devotees will understand. Like that. You know, so he's very... consider it that way, but what we see is that there's other times where someone's got an attitude and he'll challenge that attitude. And then he'll take it through until they understand. Does that make sense? You know? So that's the whole point is that you deal with what you can deal with and combine that with what the other person is able to appreciate. That's preaching. Like that. So it's not a matter of hard or soft. These are weaknesses in preaching. Hard is a weakness, and soft is a weakness. Right? Because in soft, the external is nice, but the internal or the Krishna consciousness is lacking. The other one, the Krishna consciousness is great, but the external, the culture is lacking. So the point is, preaching means it's both. And of the two, the philosophy is more important. The actual Krishna consciousness is the important thing. Because if you have that, people will appreciate. So, yeah. 24. The spiritual value of the Varnashram system is due to the fact that it admits the possibility of the activity of conditioned souls being endowed with reflected spiritual quality by being directed towards the unalloyed service of the Absolute on the transcendental plane. So in other words, the Varnashram system, then it has that context that the spiritual values and knowledge in that is part of it. Mm-hmm. Right? We're not the body, we're the soul. The material world is temporary. You know, everything's birth, death, old age, and disease. All these different aspects like that, that then bring you to the understanding that the soul is separate from matter. All those things are part of the system. So if you can understand that right from the beginning, like Prahlad Maharaj, that's better. If not, then you start focusing on that later, you know, and retiring in sannyas. But it's natural that the system can accommodate it all the way through. So the spiritual platform, or the Vijnana Moy, works very nicely within the Varnashram system. But at the same time, it can also accommodate right down to the hedonist, as long as he follows the rules. You know, the basic rules. So the whole point is it can accommodate all these four levels itself. Then it doesn't have a problem that all those four levels are then directed towards the fifth level, prema. So that's why it's accepted. That's the transcendental purpose. It doesn't say that Varnashram itself is. The spiritual value is due to the fact that it admits the possibility of the activity of conditioned souls being endowed with reflected spiritual quality and being directed towards the unalloyed service of the Absolute on the transcendental plane. So in other words, it includes the spiritual, like Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. So Moksha is there. But it accommodates that Moksha is for prema. That's why it's used. What other system does that? Does the democratic system accept Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha? Socialist? Communist? I don't know what else they have. Dictatorship or the monarchy? Do they? None of them do. The Varnashram does, and it includes all the necessities of all these other systems. Right? Because certain people work on these systems. Does that make sense? Does the governance work on socialism? No, it takes taxes, it manages, it does everything like that. So who needs socialism? The mass, the people, the common person. He has to be taken care of by the state.
Yes.
But the state takes care of itself. Right? So that aspect is necessary, but then when that bleeds over into administration, you can't administrate when there's socialism. You understand? Administration has to work in its own rules. Just like the intellectual, it has to function in its own rules. It can't be controlled by government or by all these other things. Does that make sense? So you have to have a system that accommodates all this. And then the capitalist, of course, and, you know, like that. So he'll make money off of anything. So that's the whole thing. Everything has its place. So that he's willing to make money and all that, that's a good thing. And that you're paying your taxes, you're giving in charity, you're taking care of your dependents, that's all good. Problem comes is when they try to make money off of anything. So it has to be restricted there, and then the capitalistic element has to be able to come out where it's strong. Same with administration, same with the socialists, same with the intellectuals. Each one has their strength, each one has their weakness. And so the Varnashram system brings out the strength in each and controls all their weaknesses. Right? But its purpose is pure devotion. So it's the perfect system. Like that. No other system actually can compare at all. But because it's so sophisticated, it's harder to understand. Because generally somebody only knows one system, and even that they don't know that well, let alone knowing a system that accommodates all of that. So, yeah. 25. 25. It is the purpose of the Varnashram regulation to impart this direction to the activity of the conditioned souls. The crucial nature of this theistic purpose of the Varnashram arrangement is fully treated in Srimad Bhagavatam, right? So the theistic purpose means, in other words, following God's laws and bringing the activity, right, the Kriya, to the lotus feet of the Lord. It is not explicitly treated in any other Shastric work. But the other Shastric works just deal with it that it is there. People are following Varnashram. That's the uniqueness of Bhagavatam. It's dealing with the Varnashram, deals with it simply from that transcendental viewpoint. All the other ones, just Varnashram is just Varnashram. It's the social system you use, and that's what you do. Then there's Bhakti. Right? But Bhagavatam shows how even the Varnashram is seen from the viewpoint of Bhakti. It's unique. And he says, it's not explicitly treated in any other Shastric work. Others might mention it, but that's it. But Bhagavatam will very explicitly show how each one at their different positions is involved.
Can you say that Bhagavatam is for any topics is presenting the pure Bhakti?
Yes. Yes, that's the unique, and it deals with all topics. That's the thing, because it is the conclusion of all the Vedas. So all the 14 books of Vedic knowledge, they all find their conclusion in the Bhagavatam. That's the whole point.
It is the book.
It is the book. It is actually the book. Abhideya, or function. Unalloyed, Varnashram, and ignorant functions of the soul. Okay, like wide variety here, right? One, Shuddha Bhakti is the only proper function of all unalloyed individual souls and is located on the plane of transcendence. But all animate life forms are potentially eligible for the transcendental service of the Absolute. So all animate life forms, but the inanimate, they generally don't seem to get involved so much. Not that you, means... they're potentially eligible for the transcendental service. The other ones, you can engage them, but not that they can engage. You know what I'm saying? Like the animal, even you put out prasad, it'll walk over and eat it. But the plant, if you don't put the prasad on the plant, you don't pour the charinamrita or hang the garland in the tree, it's not going to walk over and put it on. Right? Right? Because it says animate. It means if they're ants, they're animate. Does that make sense? So they will walk over and then.
Even if you don't want.
Yes, possibly even if you don't want. Two, Varnashram life is not the unalloyed spiritual life that is led by fully liberated souls. It is the stage of preparatory to such life. Neither is it on a par with the life of unmixed sensuousness that is led by people outside the Varnashram system. So, it's above this lower thing, which don't follow, but it's not on the level of Shuddha Bhakti. So when we throw it out, it's not the same as not following it. It's still in a better position. Right? So, the fully liberated souls, then they don't necessarily live the Varnashram life, they live spiritual life. So it's not that social customs and that they're not being followed that are documented in Varnashram, but they're only doing it as part of devotional service. Since in devotional service, you have that, see all living entities, you have that kindness to all living entities. Therefore, then, how do you express kindness? If it's said that you are supposed to see all living entities and be compassionate to all living entities, how do you define compassion? How do you express that? Shastra will show that. So therefore, the Varnashram expresses how you show that. Mm-hmm. But some are doing it because those Varnashram followers are doing it because by following these things, it's pious. Mm-hmm. Right? They'll get you the heavenly planets. Or you do these, it's pious, but without attachment, it'll get you liberated. Right? So it's the proper thing to do, the mode of goodness. But for the devotee, they're doing it because it pleases Krishna. So they're only doing it as devotional service. The definitions of it may be explained in Varnashram, right? But that's not why they're doing it. So it's not based on Shastra they're doing it. It's based on devotion they're doing it. and automatically is in line with Shastra.
Yes.
So, yeah?
We see that those who follow Samanya and Vidhi Bhakti, Varnashram is a prominent element
in
their practice.
Yes.
But for us, it's not. It's in support of the main.
Because we follow Bhagavatam.
Right.
So in other words, we've been given the path of pure devotional service.
Right.
Whether we follow it or not, that's another thing.
That's
because the point is this, for us to follow nicely Varnashram in that, like we see other sampradayas, would we be able to do it?
No.
Just like I mentioned, going a typical, proper, high-class Brahmin, bath facility. You go in, you use the bathroom, like that, there's water in the bathroom, you wash your hands, mouth, and feet. You come out of that bathroom, outside the bathroom, there's another area there where you wash your hands, mouth, and feet again, because now that is not water from the bathroom. So in other words, it's just the same water, so it's just as clean. But it has the purification of the mind that is there in the outside water that won't be there with the inside water. Right? And that's just any time. Even you walk in the bathroom just to wash your hands, you're still going to wash your feet. Because the bathroom's not that clean. You know what I'm saying? And that's just the bathroom. Let alone how we cook, how we eat, how we do everything. Like I was with one devotee. Their families are archikas. They manage a major temple and things like that. And it's their own temple, right? And so then they were saying when they brought the milk, in the evening or something like that, hot milk. They bring in those funny little, little cups that have those really prominent lip on them.
Yeah.
And like that. And he says, we use this cup because even hot milk, it's hot, scalding hot milk, or whatever they drink, they never touch their mouth with it.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you don't see it with big glasses of milk because, you have to pour slower. So it's just these things of Varnashram. Even I was hearing Subhagamaj was saying, because he's from an aristocratic family. And so, if you've ever seen them, those huge houses in Calcutta, it's just one house. You don't see them as much anymore. They're mostly gone. Big, huge houses. They have some grounds and everything like that. In the ground floor, so they generally are like three stories like this. So the ground floor is where, you meet the public and things like that and all these things. But in the back, on the ground floor, is where all the bath, toilet, clothes washing, hanging, all that's on that floor. And so it's a big house. There are 50 people living in the house. It's one of those kind of families. It's a big house. It's a huge house. It'd be like your whole building. That would probably be bigger than that. Probably at least half again as big. Same height, but wider, like that. And that's one family. Like that. And garages and that are separate. Like downstairs, that fully would be able to be used. So that's, that would be a typical aristocratic family in Calcutta before, the house. So he was saying is that after using the toilet, when they'd wash their hands after going to the toilet, is that, you had to wash your left hand, but you couldn't, they had two things. You couldn't touch the tap to turn on the water.
Yeah.
Someone else in the family that was clean had to turn it on for you. And generally, because everybody's there, it's not a problem. But he related that once he was stuck because I think they had all gone out for a wedding or something like that. So he said, how do you turn on the water? And even then, when they did turn on the water, they took the soap and they put it in their right hand. And then moving it in the right hand, they wash the right hand, and when the right hand is clean, then they started moving it and then putting the left hand underneath it so that the soap from the, water from going over the right hand went on the left hand, and that way they washed the left hand. And then when that was done, then they do them both together. And this is aristocratic family. We're not talking, Brahmins and like this. We're talking just, the high class.
Are they still living?
It's smaller in number. It's dwindling. The point is these are things you can do now. So that's why then for us means the best is the angle of Varnashram from Srimad Bhagavatam. It's for those who have, you know, basically, you could say those who are the, you know, serious or sincere studiers, you know, those who are studying the Vedic literatures. Right? At the same time as, other than that, there is no chance for those who are below the Varnashram system, because they don't have the adhikar to function within it. You know, like Prabhupada is always talking Varnashram, but he's talking it from the angle of the Bhagavatam, from pure devotion. Then some devotee mentioned something, I guess he had come across Manu or something, and he got into just quoting the rules of Varnashram. You know, but this one this, that one that, and Prabhupada looked at him and says, if we go according to Varnashram, or according to Manu, says you're a Malecha, and so you're not qualified to do any of those things, so... You know, so it's only by pure devotion that then the qualification. You see, so that's why it is the perfect system, is that it descends from pure Shuddha Bhakti and then extends down into Varnashram. But we're only using it on the level of the Vijnanamoya, or the what do you call it, Adhokshija level, right? Because we're not qualified to use it on the Aparoksha level. Now, those who are born in these families in India and that, they can do it. Right? But at the Aparoksha, I mean at the Adhokshija, where the Lord descends down into everything in the world and how you say, controls it all. At that level, that connection of Varnashram to Krishna consciousness and to our sadhana, that works for us. That we get from Bhagavatam, because the other literatures generally, like you said, it's not explicitly treated in any other Shastric work. They may mention it, but most won't catch it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why then we have, but when someone comes in from Manu, it's not enough. It has to be, you know, how Bhagavatam has approached that point from Manu. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the thing. We either, it's just chant, we don't care, or it's, you know, just Manu from that lower point. You know, that lower point is the third level of consciousness, so it's higher than most. So. Okay, so. 3, every form of activity of conditioned souls outside the Varnashram system is inspired by meaningless, malicious hostility to the Absolute. Yeah. All such activity is necessarily atheistical. Right? Because it's not based on anything that's coming from Scripture. It's just based on their own desire. This mundane world is the congenial sphere for the practice of the deluded dominating activity that is coveted by conditioned souls for practicing active aversion towards the Absolute. Right? In other words, just being sensuous and doing whatever you like. So it's the perfect environment for that. You know, so to say it's Kali Yuga, no, it's the material world. The conditions for such activity are supplied by the deluding power. They constitute the realm of nescience, spiritual ignorance, or achit. Right? So when you say achit, it means because she's supplying that, and people within that, then they're controlled by that. So material world is just perfect for giving that, whether it's more pious or more impious. But the point is connected with the transcendental, then the Varnashram that's given by Bhagavatam and that angle that the Acharyas talk about, that always works. It's not controlled by the ages. Right? It's not controlled by achit. 4, but as soon as the activity of chit or uneclipsed cognition is aroused in the spiritual essence of the misguided soul, it dissipates by its appearance such wrong addiction to the ignorant activities of this world, and also the susceptibility of being tempted by the deluding power. So it gets rid of the interest in it and makes it, how you say, that attachment to it, and gets rid of the interest in it. So if you get rid of the attachment and you get rid of the interest, then you're back to nothing. Right? It means you don't have any dealings with the material. Right? You're to the neutral point. Now, you through sadhana, you're cultivating the positive. Does that make sense? Because you first are interested in something.
Yes.
Then from being interested, you contemplate, then you get attached. Then from attachment, you engage. So by the devotional process, by the chit potency, you stop doing the activities, then gradually you're purified, you give up the attachment, then you give up the interest. Then you're just back to the natural, neutral state. Then from there, you cultivate the positive. Does that make sense? Because sometimes it's, well, what's the difference between desire and attachment? Attachment means you need to do it. Desire is interesting. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it shows that it removes both of these. So then one's attracted to the Lord, attached to the Lord. That's the... Five, there's no common ground between the unalloyed spiritual function and the activity of conditioned souls in the grip of nescience. Right? Because the common ground, it means we're looking at, we generally look at the secondary, but that's not the point. It's the consciousness. Because when the consciousness is pure, the secondary activities are engaged in Krishna service. When you're not pure, the secondary activities are engaged in yourself. So the common point is not the activities. So that's what he's saying. There's no commonality. Because one is about Krishna, one is against Krishna. Does that make sense? The one does not dovetail into the other. It is for that this reason that the unalloyed spiritual function can never be understood by the resources of the archaeologists, historians, allegorists, philosophers, etc. of this world. Because one doesn't go into the other. It's that when there's bhakti, that's then bhakti descends down into this, not that this transforms into that.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Because the whole point is that do you see the secondary connected to Krishna? If so, the chit potency is there. If you see the secondary not connected to Krishna, the achit potency is there. Right? So, yeah. Such inferior speculations tamper with the transcendental personality of the Absolute. They belong to the realm of nescience and constitute the active denial of the entity of the Absolute. Right? That he's a person. By indulging in such speculations, our spiritual nature is deprived of its proper function. Right? The spiritual nature to be interested in something beyond then is tampered with. And then its actual proper function of interaction with the Absolute Truth doesn't happen, with the Lord himself as a person. Doesn't happen. Right? That makes sense. In other words, what we're doing here is we see very much in this study, we're seeing that the separation between transcendental and spiritual is being made very clear. Right? Generally, if we're looking at it from the perspective of Bhagavatam, we don't have to make that difference, right? But if we're looking at it and comparing Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and Bhakti, we have to show the difference. Because in Moksha, that's the spiritual platform. But it's not actually until there's Bhakti that it crosses and accepts Krishna as a person, and it's about him as a person, right? The his subjective reality. Right. Seven, conduct enjoined by the Varnashram system is calculated to counteract the inherent atheistical trend of all worldly activities, which are unavoidable in the conditioned state. So, Varnashram is actually meant to counter that, because you want to do things on your own without God, and Varnashram is all about rules that are given by God. So it's always trying to counter that. You get that from authority, from the scriptures, from the guru. Then when one comes to the point of understanding pure bhakti is the purpose, then you surrender to Vaishnava guru and study Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Then it has its natural thing. Now, still you're interacting, maintaining the body and all that, you still have to do, because you can say, oh, but as a devotee, we don't need Varnashram. So that's okay if you're living the lifestyle of the Python Sadhu. He doesn't need to follow, as far as the vocational side. So the Brahmacharya, that doesn't matter. And we can obviously he's not married because his wife probably wouldn't go along with it, right? Unless she's the one out working and making the money, and he just like a python, then whatever comes on the table, he eats it.
That's a modern scenario.
Yeah, that's the modern python saga. Yeah, it's like that. So, no, that's the python swadu. Then there's sadhu. So that's
the
yes. Yes, the couch potato swadu. Yes, but there's a difference between the two, right? So the main thing is in the Vedic, it's always made on consciousness makes the difference, not on form, because you only have one form. Does that make sense?
One form? What's the meaning?
Means the Kriya Shakti, that forms are the same.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the point is that's not where you see the differences and the similarities. It's in the consciousness where you see that. That's why it's on a higher level. So when we try to look at it from the secondary and argue on the secondary, then we have a problem. Now you just see the heads. How do you say? Guess what we call it? Floating heads. Like that.
Yeah, we have talking heads now. We have
floating heads. Those guys make music. These guys don't. They just.
They just float.
They just float. Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, so does that make sense? So, the whole idea of the Varnashram is to bring you across to accepting the position of the Lord. So it's trying to change the consciousness, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, bring you to that level. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to get you on that, because on the level of Vijnana Moya, then you're willing to function on the platform of the soul. Therefore, then your activities, then can it's easy enough to focus on Vaidhi, Sadhana, Bhakti. Right?
Yes.
So that's there. Does that make sense? Or when it goes into spontaneity, it's just advanced on that at a lower level as the other. Because he also calls the fifth level, he calls it rag. But here, technically, in other places, then he says ragatmika. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's prema. Lord Jesus says prema pumarta mahan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not nishkam karma yoga pumarta mahan. Right? So it's just it gets.
When by advancing in Krishna consciousness, we are supposed to come to the Nishtha level.
Yes.
And Nishtha level means we are automatically accepting Varnashram Dharma. There's no other solution.
We're accepting, or at least we're stable in our practices that we do.
Yes.
Because you could have someone on that level who's steady in devotional service, focused on that, but may not actually be trained very well in the Varnashram activity, so may not be able to do. But it's not that they're opposed to it. It's just they don't know, and so they just do what they do.
Yes.
You know? Yes. Like that. Because these things you learn by association.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. So, yeah. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada.